Ekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome to this deep dive. Today, we are taking on contradictions, not just, you know, everyday arguments, but those fundamental logical knots that pop up when seemingly perfect reasoning leads you somewhere. Well, impossible.
That's right. We're diving into Margaret Kwanza's really insightful book, Paradox.
And for a lot of us, a paradox might just seem like a clever riddle, maybe a party trick. But Kwanza argues they're actually much, much more significant.
Yeah, she sees them as crucial signals, like alarm bells in our intellectual framework. They force us to test the very foundations, how we define truth, knowledge, even rationality itself.
So why should you, listening now, care about these sometimes pretty abstract philosophical puzzles, things like Zeno or the liar paradox?
Well, because understanding them is honestly a kind of shortcut to boosting your critical thinking.
Right. By analyzing where logic seems to break down, whether it's ancient Greek runners or, you know, modern problems in AI, we start to spot the hidden assumptions, the blind spots in our own thinking.
Exactly. Kwanza frames paradoxes as these essential diagnostic tools for the mind. The goal isn't just to solve the puzzle, it's to see what the puzzle reveals about how we reason.
And to show that these contradictions aren't failures necessarily, they can actually be the starting point for real progress, for sort of conceptual breakthroughs.
Precisely. They're not dead ends. They're engines for discovery. So our guide on this journey is Margaret Kwanza. She's a professor of philosophy, and her expertise really lies in logic, epistemology, philosophy of language, the real nuts and bolts of reasoning.
What makes her take on this so valuable, I think, is that she doesn't just keep these puzzles locked away in academic circles.
No, not at all.
She's got the serious technical chops. You know, she can dissect really complex things like Russell's paradox. But her mission seems broader. It's about showing how these formal logical issues actually shed light on the messiness of our everyday thinking and how we use language.
That's a great way to put it. She operates right at that intersection point between the super rigorous formal systems and, well, just how humans actually talk and think.
Yeah.
She avoids treating paradoxes like they're just esoteric jokes or something. For her, a paradox is this critical window. It lets us peek into the actual architecture of cognition. We see not just what we think, but maybe how our minds are structured to think in the first place.
Okay, so let's unpack the core argument here. Kwanza is essentially saying that whenever we find ourselves in a situation where, you know, sound reasoning leads to a conclusion that's just absurd or flat out contradictory,
yeah,
we've actually learned something really profound. It's not usually that the world itself is illogical.
Right. It's more likely that the tools we're using, our premises, our rules of inference, our language, are maybe flawed or incomplete or being stretched too far.
So the book aims to demystify paradoxes, but also to show us that they're kind of inevitable.
Exactly. And in any system that's complex enough, think formal math or natural language or even complex social systems, once it gets sophisticated enough to reflect on itself, it risks running into these kinds of limits. Paradoxes are like the friction in the system. And that friction, she argues, is what generates heat and light and eventually progress.
Okay, that makes sense. And she gives us a toolkit to understand these different kinds of friction, right? Using WVO Quine's classification, that seems pretty key.
Absolutely key. It helps massively to know what kind of paradox you're dealing with. There are three main types.
Let's break them down. First up.
First, we have veridical paradoxes. Now, these are often the most surprising, maybe even startling. The conclusion seems totally absurd, completely counterintuitive, but it turns out to be demonstrably mathematically true.
Okay, give us the classic example people might know.
The birthday paradox is perfect. You ask a group, how many people do you need in a room to have a better than 50% chance that at least two share the same birthday?
Right. And intuitively, you think maybe 180, half the days in the year, something like that.
Most people guess way high, like 100, 150.
Yeah.
But the actual answer is just 23 people.
They're only 23.
Yeah. It feels wrong, but the probability maths checks out perfectly. That's veridical.
Yeah.
Your intuition is shocked, but the logic holds. It shows the limits of our gut feelings about probability.
Okay, so veridical seems false, but is true. Challenges intuition. What's the second type?
Second are the falsidical paradoxes. These are arguments that look sound on the surface. They seem logical, but they actually contain a hidden flaw. It might be a subtle mistake in the reasoning, or maybe a premise that's sneakily false or improperly applied.
So once you spot the trick, the paradox dissolves.
Precisely. find the flaw, and poof, the contradiction disappears. As we'll get into, Zeno's famous paradoxes of motion, like Achilles and the tortoise, often fall into this category. They rely on a sort of intuitive but ultimately flawed understanding of infinity.
Which math later cleared up.
Right. Calculus gave us the tools. So, spot the flaw, paradox resolved.
Got it. And the third type, the really deep ones.
Antinomies. Yeah, these are the big ones, the showstoppers. They're the most profound, maybe the most troubling, because they seem to reveal a genuine deep crack in our foundational beliefs or logical systems.
So these aren't just clever tricks or intuition failures?
No. Antinomies suggest something is fundamentally wrong or incomplete with the whole system of thought itself. They often force a major rethink, a kind of conceptual revolution. The classic example is the liar paradox.
This statement is false.
Exactly. That little sentence isn't just solved by finding a hidden flaw like in Zeno. It forces us fundamentally to reconsider what truth even means and how it works.
Okay, let's dive deeper there. Zeno's paradoxes, the paradoxes of infinity. The Achilles and the tortoise one is so famous. Achilles, the fastest runner, gives a tortoise a head start.
Mm-mm.
To catch up, Achilles has to reach where the tortoise started.
Mm.
But in that time, the tortoise has moved ahead a little bit.
Right.
Then Achilles has to cover that new distance, but again, the tortoise crawls forward. And so on.
Infinitely. Ad infinitum.
The seeming logical contradiction is that Achilles must complete an infinite number of smaller and smaller tasks to catch up. And our intuition just screams, you can't do an infinite number of things.
Yeah.
Especially not in a finite amount of time.
It really plays on our deep discomfort with the concept of infinity, particularly a completed infinity. The ancient Greeks really struggled with this.
So how did we get past that? It wasn't just philosophers arguing, right?
No, the real resolution came much, much later, and it came from mathematics, specifically the development of calculus and the understanding of infinite series. The key idea is what's called a convergent series. Think about slicing a cake. You take half the cake, then you take half of what's left, then half of that remainder, and so on forever.
You're making an infinite number of cuts.
Exactly, an infinite number of actions. But the total amount of cake you take, it converges to a finite amount, the whole cake.
So Achilles' infinite tasks, the distances he covers, and the time it takes, they add up. They converge to a finite total.
Precisely. He does complete an infinite number of tasks, mathematically speaking, but he does it in a finite amount of time because the increments become infinitesimally small very quickly. Calculus provides the rigorous framework to show the sum is finite.
So the math solves the mechanical problem. It turns it from maybe seeming like an antinomy into a falsidical paradox.
Yeah.
The flaw was our old understanding of infinity.
That's a good way to put it. The mathematical contradiction is resolved. Though, some would say the deeper philosophical questions about how mathematical models relate to physical reality, well, those discussions continue.
Okay, now let's shift to those system-shattering antinomies, the ones that mess with language and logic itself.
Right, the heavy hitters. And the most famous is definitely the liar paradox. Just that simple sentence, this statement is false.
Yeah, it ties your brain in knots. If you assume the statement is true, then what it says must be the case, meaning it must be false.
Mm-hmm.
But if you assume it's false, then what it says is not the case, which means it's not false.
Mm-hmm.
So it must be true.
It's a perfect loop. True, if and only if it's false. An inescapable contradiction based purely on self-reference and the concept of truth.
And you said this isn't just a word game. It had real impact.
Oh, huge impact. Because the same underlying logical structure caused an absolute crisis in the foundations of mathematics around the turn of the 20th century. This was Russell's paradox.
Okay, connect the dots for us. How is that related?
Russell considered sets. Think of a set as just a collection of things. Some sets contain themselves, like maybe the set of all abstract concepts. Others don't, like the set of all teacups doesn't contain itself because it's a set, not a teacup. Okay.
Russell then defined a specific set. Let R be the set of all sets that do not contain themselves.
The set of all non-self-containing sets. Got it.
Now the killer question. Does R contain itself?
Uh-oh. Let me think. If R does contain itself, then it has to satisfy the rule for being in R, which is that it doesn't contain itself. So that's a contradiction.
Right.
But if R does not contain itself, then it meets the condition for being included in R, a set that doesn't contain itself. So it must be in R. Another contradiction.
Bingo. Complete logical meltdown right at the heart of set theory, which was supposed to be the bedrock of all mathematics.
Mm-hmm.
It proved that the early sort of naive, intuitive way of thinking about sets was fundamentally inconsistent.
Wow. So how did they fix that? How do you solve something like the liar or Russell's paradox?
Well, one of the most influential solutions came from the logician Alfred Tarski. He proposed what's called a hierarchy of languages.
Hierarchy of languages, what does that mean? Basically, Tarski argued that to talk meaningfully about the truth or falsity of statements in a particular language, let's call it the object language, you need to step outside it into a richer, higher level language, a meta language.
So a statement like this statement is false is ill-formed because it tries to talk about its own truth value within the same language level.
Essentially, yes. The predicate is true or is false, Tarski argued, can't belong to the same language level as the statements it's evaluating. You need a meta language to say snow is white is true in English. You can't just have the statement assessing itself without creating the potential for these loops.
Some might say that sounds like just defining the problem away, though.
It's a fair critique, but Quanzo presents it more as recognizing a necessary architectural limit. Think about it like computer code. A program can run, it can execute instructions, but it generally can't analyze the validity of its own entire source code while it's running. You need a separate tool, like a debugger or a compiler, something operating at a meta level to analyze the code itself.
Okay, that analogy helps.
Tarski's work showed that formal systems like logic and math needed stricter rules about self-reference to avoid collapse. It forced mathematicians to rebuild set theory on more careful axiomatic foundations, like Zermelo-Frankel's set theory, which explicitly blocks Russell's paradox.
Let's pivot now to a paradox that hits closer to home, maybe. Something that reveals fuzziness in our everyday language. The Sorites paradox, sometimes called the paradox of the heap. Can you set that one up?
Yeah, it's brilliantly simple, but really quite undermining. Imagine you have a pile of sand grains, say 10,000 grains. Everyone would agree that's a heap of sand, right?
Sure, definitely a heap.
Okay. Now, if you remove just one single grain of sand, it's still a heap, correct? 9,999 grains is still a heap.
That seems reasonable.
And the core premise is, if you have a heap, removing just one grain cannot suddenly turn it into not a heap. The change is too small.
Okay, see where this is going.
Right. But if that premise holds true, that removing one grain never makes the crucial difference, then you can repeat the process. Remove another grain, still a heap. Remove another. Keep going until you have only one grain left. By the logic we started with, that single grain must still be a heap, which is absurd.
And similarly, starting with one grain, not a heap, and adding one grain at a time, when does it become a heap? You can't pinpoint the exact grain.
Exactly. There's no sharp boundary. This paradox directly challenges a core principle of classical logic called bivalence.
Bivalence being the idea that every statement has to be strictly either true or false. There's no middle ground.
That's the one. But terms like heap or tall, bald, rich, old, they're inherently vague. They exist on a spectrum. Trying to impose a strict true-false cutoff point just doesn't work for these kinds of concepts. Where exactly does tall begin?
Yeah, you can't say 5'11 is not tall, but 6 foot absolutely is. It's fuzzy.
Totally fuzzy. And this has real-world implications. Think about legal definitions or medical diagnoses or performance reviews. If your company policy defines, say, excellent performance vaguely, the Sorites paradox lurks. You can't draw a perfectly non-arbitrary line.
So how do logicians or philosophers deal with this fuzziness if classical logic struggles?
Well, Quanzo discusses various responses. One major approach is fuzzy logic.
Fuzzy logic?
Yeah. Instead of truth values being just one, completely true, or zero, completely false, fuzzy logic allows for degrees of truth. A statement can be, say, 0.7 true or 0.3 true.
So someone who is 5'8" might be tall to a degree of maybe 0.2, while someone 6'5" is tall to a degree of 0.95.
Precisely. It builds the inherent vagueness into the logical system itself. It allows our reasoning systems to handle these shades of gray without grinding to a halt or forcing artificial boundaries.
Okay, one more category to explore, and this one has huge implications for decision-making, economics, even AI. Paradoxes of rationality. Let's talk about Newcomb's problem.
It's
a mind bender.
It really is. Okay, here's the setup. You are presented with two boxes. Box A is transparent, and you can see it always contains $1,000.
Okay, $1,000 guaranteed in box A.
Box B is opaque. You don't know what's inside. Now, here's the twist. There's a super intelligent being, a predictor, who has an uncanny ability to predict your choices. Let's say they're 99% accurate.
A nearly perfect predictor.
Okay. Yesterday, the predictor made a prediction about what you will choose now. If the predictor predicted that you would choose both box A and box B, then they put nothing, $0, in box B.
Okay. Predict two boxes, box B is empty.
But if the predictor predicted you would choose only box B, then they put $1 million in box B.
Predict one box. Box B has $1 million, and the money is already there based on yesterday's prediction.
Yes, the contents of box B are already set. The predictor has done their thing. Now it's your turn. You have two choices. One, take only box B, one boxing. Two, take both box A and box B, two boxing. What do you do?
Whoa, okay. My head is spinning already.
Yeah.
There's an immediate tension here between two different ways of thinking rationally.
Absolutely. Explain the conflict. What are the two principles pulling you in opposite directions?
Well, one line of reasoning uses the expected utility principle. It says you should maximize your expected payout based on probabilities. Since the predictor is almost always right, if I choose only box B, the predictor almost certainly predicted that, so box B likely contains $1 million. The expected value is close to $1. If I choose both boxes, the predictor almost certainly saw that coming, meaning box B is likely empty and I'll just get the $1,000 from box A. So expected utility says, one box, go for the million.
Okay, that's the expected utility argument for one boxing. Strong argument, but what's the counterargument?
The counterargument uses the dominance principle. It says, look, the prediction was made yesterday. The money is already in the boxes. Or not in box B. The past is fixed. Whatever's in box B is already there.
Right. The contents won't magically change based on your choice now.
So regardless of what the predictor predicted, and regardless of what's currently in box B, whether it's $0 or $1, choosing both boxes will always leave me $1,000 richer than choosing only box B. If B has $1, I get $1,001,000 instead of $1. If B has $0, I get $1,000 instead of $0. Taking box A is always an extra $1,000. Dominance says, two box. Why leave free money on the table?
And that is the paradox. You have two seemingly impeccable principles of rational choice, expected utility and dominance, that give you completely opposite recommendations in this scenario.
Following dominance seems rational step by step, but leads to getting only $1,000 almost every time.
While following expected utility seems almost superstitious, like you think your choice now can affect the past prediction, but it leads to getting $1 million almost every time.
So what does Quanzo say this tells us?
It fundamentally shows that our concept of rationality isn't monolithic. There isn't always one single uniquely correct rational choice, especially in situations involving predictions, strategy, and feedback loops. Which principle you prioritize depends on how you frame the problem and what you value most. This has huge implications for game theory, AI alignment, economic modeling. Anywhere agents make strategic choices based on expectations about others.
Okay, that's a lot to chew on. Let's try to synthesize some of the big themes running through Quanzo's analysis. The first major takeaway seems to be this idea of paradoxes as windows into cognitive architecture.
Absolutely. They're not just errors, they're diagnostic tools. They highlight exactly where our different reasoning systems, formal logic, intuition, language use, rub up against each other, or where the limits of a particular system lie.
So the reflection for us maybe is when you encounter some kind of irresolvable contradiction in your work or even a personal dilemma, don't just get frustrated and dismiss it.
Right. Analyze it. Ask, what hidden assumption is being revealed here? What boundary have I bumped up against? Is it a conflict between two valid ways of thinking, like in Newcomb's problem? It's a signal to dig deeper. A second big theme is definitely the limits of intuition. Quanzo really hammers this home.
Yeah, Zeno's paradoxes, the birthday paradox, even aspects of Newcomb's problem. They all demonstrate pretty dramatically how our evolved everyday gut feelings can completely break down when faced with certain concepts.
Things like actual infinity or very large numbers and probabilities or complex strategic interactions, our intuition often leads us astray.
Which is a great lesson in intellectual humility, isn't it? Your brain's default settings, your intuitive responses, they aren't always accurate, especially the more complex the situation gets.
Mm-hmm. Formal reasoning, mathematics, careful logical analysis, these become necessary correctives when intuition fails.
And the third major theme that stood out to me was how paradoxes drive progress through revision. They aren't just problems, they're catalysts.
Yes. That's maybe the most optimistic takeaway. Think about Russell's paradox again. It caused a crisis, yes. But the need to resolve that crisis forced mathematicians to develop much more rigorous and robust foundations for their entire field, modern axiomatic set theory.
So the contradiction wasn't the end of the story. It was the necessary pressure to build something better, stronger.
Exactly. We should learn to see contradictions not as failures or dead ends, but as signals that our current understanding is incomplete and as powerful motivators for the next big idea, the next refinement in whatever field we're talking about. And Kwananza's book is just full of these kinds of insights that really make you rethink how you view contradictions. We tried to pull out a few key ideas, sort of paraphrased quotes that really stick.
Okay, what's the first one?
How about this? Paradoxes often mark the boundaries between different domains of discourse, revealing where our conceptual schemes are stretched beyond their natural limits.
I like that. So when you feel that paradoxical tension, you've basically hit the edge of your current map, the edge of where that particular way of thinking works smoothly.
Precisely. It's a valuable boundary marker for your understanding. It tells you you're entering new territory that might require different tools or concepts.
Okay, another key idea.
This one relates to the liar paradox. The liar paradox teaches us that truth is not just another predicate, like red or heavy. It plays a special foundational role that creates systematic opportunities for self-reference and contradiction if not handled carefully.
Right. It gets back to that Tarskian hierarchy idea. Truth isn't just describing something in the system. It's operating on the system, which makes it uniquely powerful and potentially dangerous if it loops back on itself without restriction.
Exactly. It highlights why self-reference combined with semantic concepts like truth is so logically explosive.
And maybe one more. Something about living with them.
Yeah, perhaps this. Paradoxes are not bugs in the system of human reasoning. They are features that reveal the system's sophistication and complexity.
Ah, that flips the script nicely. Mm-hmm. The very fact that our minds can generate and grapple with these paradoxes is actually a sign of how powerful and self-reflective our cognitive abilities are.
It suggests that the capacity for paradox isn't a sign of failure, but maybe a necessary byproduct of a mind complex enough to think about its own thinking. It's a mark of sophistication. So the big question then is, what does this all mean for you listening right now? How can we apply this understanding of paradoxes in everyday life?
Well, first off, I think it sharpens critical thinking immensely. Learning to dissect the structure of Zeno's paradox or the Sorais paradox or even spotting the assumptions in Newcomb's problem. It trains you to become much better at identifying hidden premises, unstated assumptions, and potential flaws in any argument you encounter. Whether it's in a political debate, a business plan, a news article, you start looking for the weak points, the vague terms, the potential contradictions. It's the huge practical skill. And related to that is strategic decision making. Understanding the dynamics of things like the prisoner's dilemma, which is a paradox of rationality, or Newcomb's problem.
It gives you a much richer framework for analyzing complex situations involving multiple actors with potentially conflicting interests. It helps explain why individually rational choices sometimes lead to collectively terrible outcomes.
Like price wars in business, or arms races, or maybe even things like the tragedy of the commons.
Exactly. Recognizing those paradoxical structures helps you anticipate and maybe navigate them better. It shows why cooperation can be so difficult, even when it's mutually beneficial.
And a third application, maybe more direct, is about communication precision.
How so?
The Sorais paradox, the paradox of the heap, is a powerful reminder to be incredibly wary of vagueness, especially in professional settings.
Ah, yes.
If you're writing a legal contract or technical specifications or even just setting performance goals for a team, understanding the Sorites problem pushes you to use precise language, clear definitions, and quantifiable metrics whenever possible. Vague terms like reasonable effort or significant improvement are invitations to ambiguity and dispute down the line.
Be precise, set clear boundaries, because that inherent fuzziness in language can really trip up systems and relationships if you're not careful. Define your terms. For me, reflecting on all this, one of the biggest takeaways is the call for really, intellectual humility. Paradoxes are constant reminders that even our most sophisticated logical systems, our most cherished theories, are likely incomplete. Reality is complex, maybe infinitely complex, and our tools for understanding it will always have limitations, blind spots, and points of tension. There's always more to learn.
Yeah, I agree with that. And for me, the most exciting part is that paradigm shift Kwanzo encourages, moving away from seeing contradictions as just frustrating mistakes or annoying roadblocks, and learning to see them instead as these powerful engines of discovery, as opportunities.
Yeah.
When you hit that wall, that logical short circuit, don't just back away. Lean into it. Embrace the contradiction, because it probably means you're thinking about something really fundamental, really complex, and maybe, just maybe, You're on the verge of a genuine insight, a real breakthrough in understanding. The paradox isn't the problem, it's pointing the way.
Fantastic thought to end on.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.